V-minus 51. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Recent years had seen Dan McCarthy get used to time passing in inconsistent ways, from the painful slowness of his days spent hoping for an alien intervention while searching for the elusive fourth plaque, all the way to the whirlwind, gone-too-fast days he'd spent with Emma during a fortnight in the Seychelles in the cool-down months that followed contact day. Never had a day passed more hazily than this one, however, when it seemed uncannily as though evening followed morning with nothing in between. The main event of Dan's afternoon had been finding out that his imminent trip to Argentina would indeed begin with a hastily arranged late-night flight, which only served to deepen the feeling of being in limbo. The bulk of the day had involved yet another retelling of his latest contact experience and yet another attempted explanation of his new and seemingly superhuman ability. His audience was this time an audience of three, with his father Henry joined by Mr. Bird and Phil Norris. Phil had been a fixture in Birchwood since the early days of the leak, but was now a closer member of Dan's inner circle than in the past, joining the ever-present Mr. Bird in rounding out a small but important circle of support. These two men were almost polar opposites on the face of it, with Mr. Bird a clean-cut former sheriff's deputy whose door was always open, and Phil a rough-around-the-edges prepper who had ground out a living in a pawn shop for many years before the IDA leak turned his derelict drive-in lot into a license to print money. Henry McCarthy, very much the median personality of the three, had always been their common link. Now, though, they were friends in their own right. Dan valued Mr. Bird's calmness and clear head as much as he valued Phil's no-filter reactions and often esoteric knowledge. If he'd been forced to guess their reactions, he would have called it perfectly. Neither Mr. Bird's advice to be careful nor Phil's decision to immediately draw up a list of people who deserve to have their unspoken thoughts examined came as a surprise. Henry's reaction had been harder to predict, but his succinct comment that he was proud of Dan for doing the thing that was difficult but right meant a lot. A single-line statement of any kind of emotion from Henry was practically equivalent to a poem written in the clouds by anyone else, as a lifetime of experience had drummed into Dan, so he seized the words and carried them with him when it came time to leave. The only part of the day when he'd felt truly present was when he had 15 minutes with Tara and sought to make sure she would be okay being left in Birchwood without Emma again. Especially since Dan had known beyond doubt she was going through a difficult time ever since she uttered the D word. He said she could go with them if she wanted to, but Tara politely declined. Emma had already invited her, she explained, but although it sounded like a more than interesting trip, she already had plans. "Oh yeah, that club opening thing," he said, remembering what had been in her thoughts when he first listened. A smile crossed his face. "And that guy's going to be there, Jason Moore."
"A lot of different people are going to be there," Tara replied in a full-hearted but unsuccessful attempt to hide her motives.
Try as she might, the smile gave it away. Dan smiled too. It was nice to see her happy and looking like herself. "Make sure to stay in touch with Clark, though, while we're not around, okay?" "Oh, I'll be watching like a hawk," Clark butted in, revealing his stealthy eavesdropping. "And as you can see, I'm a good listener, too."
"'Cause that's not creepy at all," Tara chuckled.
"But seriously," he said, "just leave your phone's GPS tracking on and authorize me as a friend or whatever you need to do for me to know where you are. I know Emma's going to ask you to do that, because she already told me, so don't give her any stress about it, okay? It's not easy for her to leave you here, just like it's not easy for me to let them go without me, but it is what it is."
"Why aren't you going anyway?" Tara asked, wondering only now. "This isn't like their pre-honeymoon when they wanted to be alone, and after what happened then, I would have thought you'd really want to be there to keep an eye on them this time."
Clark nodded. "Oh, I do. But I can't be in two places at once, and they've always got each other. Plus, there's going to be security at the airport and then government security as soon as they reach Argentina. The way the world is right now, though, things could go south in a heartbeat. And, Tara, I'm not saying you need me to look after you or anything like that, but there's not a chance in hell I'm leaving you here with no one. I'm not the guy who's going to sit down and talk about feelings, but we all know you came back to Birchwood last month because you didn't want to be alone.
and I'm also not the guy who's going to ditch you when you need someone.
So there is one of you after all. Tara grinned, deflecting emotion with humor in an effortless way that would have made Clark himself proud. Thanks, though. For real.
The last thing Dan remembered before leaving was overhearing Mr. Bird's preferred idea for a new contact-focused United Nations body with a rotating presidency and carefully designed voting structure. It was a nice idea in theory, but Dan and plenty of others knew only too well that even the most carefully designed voting structure in the world would mean nothing the very first time China or the United States decided to ignore a non-binding resolution, as both had so many times in the past within other UN bodies. Clark insisted on driving to Denver, with Tara gladly going along for the ride and chatting to Dan in the back seat the whole time. Someone invariably commented each time a billboard for one of Tara's fashion lines or outlets passed by, which happened more frequently than she could believe. Even Dan's goodbye to Henry and the others had faded into a hazy cloud of absent memory as soon as the car's tires started rolling, and at one point he felt so absent that he hoped the messenger's recent intervention hadn't changed more within his brain than he was already aware of. He didn't want to raise this now, when it would worry Clark and Tara, so he kept it to himself. His goodbyes to them were quick when the time came, but he was present enough to know that Emma's goodbyes took a lot longer. He heard her and Clark imploring each other to stay alert and keep their wits about them, each essentially and somewhat reluctantly entrusting their younger sibling to the other. Clark had never made any secret of his view that Dan was too trusting to survive in the shark-filled waters of the media and politics without Emma diligently watching his path, but for once, Emma was equally concerned about Tara. She was more worldly than Dan, for sure, but she hadn't been herself recently, and quite likely needed Clark's presence to ensure her mental as well as physical well-being. And Dan? Clark called from the car window as a trio of uniformed police officers prepared to guide the couple through the airport to Timo's plane. Remember what we said. 5 days at most, no matter what. No matter what, Dan replied, gladly reaffirming the promise that he'd be back in Birchwood within that time frame, regardless of how difficult it might prove to get a meeting with a high-ranking Geosov like Poppy Bradshaw, and regardless of what might happen with the as-yet-undiscovered Third Triangle. So what are you guys heading down there for anyway? A bold police officer asked a few seconds later. His colleagues could only admire the attempt.
We want to find out what's really going on, Emma said, keeping it simple.
You think they'll tell you? The man pushed, sounding hopeful. Emma looked at Dan, leaving this one for him. He grinned. To be honest, officer, I don't think they're going to have much choice.